Hello, everyone. This is Jerry Pippin on another show from the UFO Congress. And we're at the Aquarius Casino Resort on the beautiful Colorado River in Laughlin, Nevada. It's a nice day here, a little windy, but not cold like most of the country. That's one of the reasons all the snowbirds come to Laughlin. Well, we came here to meet a lot of interesting people, and we have Patrick Heron. We've talked to him on the phone. Now we're going to be talking to him in person later in the show. But first of all, we're going to meet a woman who travels the world looking for UFO stories, Kathy Dickman. I think you'll find her very interesting. So stand by. We have a great show. Kathy Dickman, world-famous UFO researcher and writer. What's the name of that magazine you write for, Kathy?
Flying Saucer Review in the UK.
And you actually live in Australia, right?
Yes.
Where?
In Adelaide, South Australia.
And now tell us a little bit about Adelaide. That's, what, third or fourth size town? Or?
Yes, we've got the Woomera Rocket Range there, yeah. And we've got Kistler Air and Narunga, and they're all bases.
Now, you travel the world looking for UFO stories, I guess.
Yes.
You keep running across them all the time.
Yes.
I guess you're looking for them.
That's right.
You just got back from Cuba, and we'll talk about that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But you're telling me you actually went up to the military gate with some pictures or slides, or what was that story about in Australia?
Well,
is the military pretty tough in Australia?
This is a U.S.
Okay.
Joint U.S. Pine
okay.
Gap.
Okay.
It's a
now where
U.S.
is that? Right outside Adelaide?
That's in Northern Territory. That's in Alice Springs,
okay.
Just outside of Alice Springs, about a 2.5 hour.
They have a range or something up here, don't they?
Well, there's many levels to, mm-hmm. to Pine Gap.
You think they got an ET there?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know any answers.
I thought I'd get a story. That from you, because you
yeah.
Tell me what you did there. That was
well, I thought the work of Dr. Greer was brilliant, and the press conference and the disclosure tape was, I think, one of the best things that could have happened. And I was determined to. I was going up to Alice Springs, and I was determined to get the tape into Pine Gap. So I emailed Dr. Greer to. I told him what I was going to do and would I have his permission to duplicate his tape, make a copy of the tape, and give it to the people in Pine Gap. And he said, yes, be careful, but you go ahead, because they could have got me on the technicality of copyright or whatever, anything, you know, they could have pinned on me. So I wanted to make sure everything was all in order. And a friend of mine took me up there, and all the gates of Pine Gap, and then there's about a 5 kilometre one-way road called Hat Road, and all along the...
So this is way out there?
Oh, it's way out in the desert.
Okay.
And the signs all the way along saying turn back now, no cameras, no
kind of like our Area 51.
Yes, and there's laser security, and we tripped all of those, and another sign turn back now or 15 years imprisonment, so we just kept on driving and turn back now. And then my friend
you go any lengths to get this
I was switched onto automatic and nothing was going to stop me, you see.
Okay.
And then my friend parked his car underneath a tree, which was about 100 metres away from the gates, and all the trees were wired.
Oh, really?
Yes. But and then I walked the
wired,
last...
Wired, you mean like cameras or something?
Oh, yeah, yes.
Yeah.
And I walked the last 50 metres on my own up to the gates, and there's two guards waiting for me. And I had Dr. Greer's disclosure tape in one of those little post packs, and I was very polite to them because they looked most unimpressed. And I said, good morning, how are you? And you know, and he said, yes, what can we do for you? And I said, I'd like you to give this package to your radar department, because I didn't know what to say, you know. And they said, why, what's in it? And I said, I didn't want to mention UFOs because that's got a fringe madness tag to
sure.
it.
Sure.
So
you wanted somebody to look at it.
Yes, and I said, he says, what's it about? And I said, have you heard of Dr. Green? And they said, no. Of course they wouldn't have it. And on the edge, the outside of the tape, I put, and I told them, I said, they're UERs and UCTs. This is what's in here. And he says, what's that? And that's satellite jargon for uncorrelated targets and unknown event reports. Because if you look up in your files, you won't find any UFOs. They don't call them that. So, and I said, if you give this to your radar department, they'll know all about it. So he took it. But they had the all their cameras and video on me until I got back into the car. And then I emailed Dr. Greer to say I'd just done it, and he said, well done. So, because I thought that was important.
So you go to any lengths to get these stories out. Now, you, before I get to Cuba, you were in Mongolia.
Yes.
When was that?
About 18 months ago.
Okay, and before we even get to Mongolia, I want to mention on our website, we have several pictures you've taken with cameras. Now, most of these were with 35 millimeter, weren't they?
Some of them were 35
millimeter. So it just couldn't be something wrong with the digital camera.
No.
You took these pictures that they can see on the website, and you didn't know there was anything there.
Some I did see, others I didn't see.
Okay. And they're strange shapes here. I like that daylight sighting. At first, I thought that might be a rectangle, but it's more like a flying roof or something. What'd you say it was? It
looked which one?
The daylight shot.
The daylight shot.
The little shot you took with the UFO over the corner.
Oh, the top hat.
Yeah, right. That top hat.
Yes, a very technical name for it.
Yeah, you're right. So what did you see in Mongolia?
Well, I didn't see anything, but I went there just asking people if they had seen anything, because when I go to different countries, I don't want to upset their belief system. That is first on my, you know, on my mind. And we had a guide for a week, and I was taken to the Gobi Desert. And second day I was with her, I then asked, when we got comfortable with each other, I then asked her if she'd ever seen or knew anybody that saw lights in the sky. And she didn't know what I was talking about. So I left it for a day or so, and then I said, do you know the word OVNI or UFO? Well, they haven't got any faxes or glossy magazines or anything like that in the Gobi Desert. And she didn't know, she really didn't know what I was talking about. Then I pulled out a picture of that orange plasma craft, which mm-hmm. you've just seen.
Yeah, right, in right. The dark. And we have that picture.
It's very similar to Carlos Diaz's picture. I pulled out that and said, have you ever seen anything like this? And she said, do you mean people who visit here from other worlds? I nearly fell off my sandhill. Yes. So she proceeded to tell me of an event which happened about 4 or 5 years ago in the desert. And there were some herdsmen minding that they've got camels and goats. Yeah, that's their main animal, you know, like what they eat over there. And they don't know what time it was. It was well into the night when, this is her description, when they saw a plate-shaped object come down into the in the Gobi Desert. And I asked her, did it land? And she says, no, it just hovered off the ground. And then I asked her, was there anything different about it? Could she describe if there's anything different? And she said, the herdsman said there were people on board. And I asked how big. I didn't say were they grey eyes, short ones, because I didn't want to put any thoughts into her head. And she said no, they were tall, very tall, maybe 10 foot high. And she said they had a bronze, they were bronze coloured, very long legs and long arms, no mouth, no nose and no ears, but one eye. And I didn't. The immediate sensation that happened when she said that, I imagined that to be a lens, but I didn't see it, so I don't know. I
really haven't heard that description before, have you?
Neither have I.
Yeah.
I mean, but this is coming from herdsmen in the desert, you know, so.
Right.
She said they had one eye, and then I asked her, was there any information transferred between the herdsman and the sighting? And she said, yes, through their mind. She didn't use telepathy, but she said through their mind, they were told that these craft make themselves visible all over the world to people who are aware and are higher thinkers. So you don't have to be a member of academia or a mathematician.
I started to say, that's as good an explanation as I've heard
exactly.
from anybody. Beats most PhDs' explanations.
Exactly. So when I went back to the capital, which is Ulaanbaatar, I started to inquire if there was any more information, and I got exactly the same sighting. Some people, around about the same time, there was a report exactly the same in the northwest quadrant of the city of Ulaanbaatar. Some other people had seen the exact same craft with the people on board. So those two matched up, they correlated. So that was very good.
How many countries have you been to?
I've lost count. I don't count.
I was about to say, I can tell you've been to quite.
And
you've been around, Kathy.
And Guatemala, there was a lady living in the jungles in Guatemala, so that's another story. So.
Did you ever strike out, find a country nobody had ever seen a UFO?
I was in Nevis, St. Kitts, just off Cuba. When we left Cuba, we went to Nevis, St. Kitts.
What, an island, a little
yeah,
island?
Yeah, it's a little island, Nevis, St. Kitts. And they had heard them, but they didn't want to talk about it. And they said, several people I asked, and I said, have you heard of ovnis or UFOs? Oh, we don't get those here. And several people just didn't want to talk about it. So.
Well, we want to talk about Cuba when we come back. We're talking to Kathy Dickman. And the name of that magazine again is?
Flying Saucer Review.
Is it on the web, too?
Yes, they have a site.
Yeah, they do
yes,
have a website.
Yes, yes.
Great. Well,
and it's been going for 15 years.
It's not a newcomer, then, is
it? No, no. And as I mentioned, members of royalty, I believe.
We'll be right back. Don't go away. This is Jerry Pippin. This is the UFO Fire.
In March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
This didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hear about it on The Jerry Pippin Show.
Jerry Pippin, we're broadcasting from Aquarius Resort, and that is in Laughlin, Nevada, and we're right on the Colorado River. We're here during the heart of the UFO Congress, and Kathy came a long way. How long did it take you to get from Australia, Kathy Dickman?
From my home to this hotel, it took about 34 hours, but the direct flight from Sydney to Los Angeles is probably
you can get around, so you probably get frequent flyer miles.
Oh, yes. This one was free.
Oh, well, great. That's the best kind.
Yes.
How do you get to Cuba? You got to Cuba, but it's pretty difficult. Maybe not from Australia.
No, it isn't. No problems in Australia. No.
Just when you try to leave the States.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. What about your story? And when did you choose to go to Cuba to begin with? Not nice weather.
You like 100% humidity, and
okay,
I don't.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay. You're from Australia.
Yes.
Are there humid places in Australia?
Yes, in the East Coast, in Brisbane and Sydney, they're humid as well.
Okay, well, tell me a little bit about you. I take it you went to Havana.
Oh, yes. We went to Havana and also went to Trinidad. That is a city on the south coast.
Tell me what you discovered in...
Right. When I knew I was going to Cuba, I managed to get in touch with a Cuban UFO group over there. And I got to know very well over the internet a gentleman called Orestes Guirbao. And when I was in Havana, he met me with 10 of his UFO group, and I was extremely impressed with the credentials of these people. There's no alien T-shirts or anything like that. If they have a sighting, they report it in the paper as it is. You know, they take it seriously. And in amongst this group who came to me...
So it wouldn't be uncommon to pick up the... I don't know what the name of the paper is in Havana, but the Daily Havana, whatever.
And there'd be a reporting, and it'd be reported as is.
And it would be with a straight face.
Yes. And members of the group that were came to meet me. There was two professors from the university. There was a head of an IT company, a senior meteorologist, a pastor to do with the church over there, and a healer, and there was many, and a filmmaker. So there was that, you know, a whole spectrum of.
Well, that
of
sounds
interest.
Like a pretty little wide profile of a bunch of people.
And they, the story they gave me was an abduction. And I mentioned before that we were in Trinidad, and this the drive from Havana to Trinidad takes 5 hours. I know that because we drove there. It's a resort place. And this gentleman by the name of Rimberto Damaso, he lived in Trinidad, and he had been having sightings for quite some months, but this was a few years ago. And one morning he went to the bathroom to answer call of nature, and he just got his shorts and his slippers on. The time was 5:30 a.m. in the morning, but he saw a light coming towards him at great speed. The next thing he remembered, he was flat on his back on the grass in Havana at 6:05. In the morning. So that's 30 minutes.
That they can't account for.
That he can't account for. And you can't get from Trinidad to... He had, Rimberto had massive disorientation. He didn't know where he was or what had happened. And then the police drove him back to his home at 9 a.m. After some regression, he remembered two human-like beings taking him aboard a craft. And it was an oval-shaped, circular, semi-oval, circular shaped craft, and it had a circle underneath the craft, and it had an opening that with several different compartments, like the lens of a, you know, one of the old shutter lenses,
mm-hmm.
like a petal, and he was taken up through that, and he said he was taken through a journey through the star system, and everything started to speed up. And that's, in a nutshell, that's all he could remember. And after that, he got, a year later, he got quite sick, and then he passed away.
Wow.
The doctors couldn't find out at first what was wrong with him. But it was interesting to note that his two sons didn't really believe their father's stories about the lights he'd been seeing. But Rimberto's last night on earth, I don't believe in death, but Rimberto's last night on earth before he passed over, his son, his elder son, saw exactly the same craft, even with the circle aperture underneath. So that was extremely interesting.
Well, that is interesting. Mm. And you know, you mentioned something there, the father and the son seeing the same craft.
Yeah.
It seems to me that this follows in families.
Yes, I've heard of that
and
too.
You found that too.
Yes, well,
the world.
My son sees things as well. So my son.
Now, have you had an ET contact yourself?
Not that I know of. Okay. Well, I. You know,
well, you got pictures, but
yes.
I mean, you haven't had a being come out with an eye in the forehead that look like a lens and talk to you.
I haven't seen any creatures. Or
what do you make of this? Why is it worldwide? It sounds to me. Maybe this person in Mongolia had the right answer.
Yes, well, that's right.
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No,
What do you think about it?
Well, I mean, we live in a very small part of the cosmos, so, you know, and we have to accept that there's sentient beings of light that may not look like us, and we can't understand it. But I'm just accepting of what's given to me.
And what's the most unusual story you've heard worldwide off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, I was in Guatemala in the jungles about 2 years
ago.
Yeah,
you mentioned that again. That'd be a good one to
follow up on. And there was a guide telling me of his mother. He hadn't seen an OVNI himself, but he said, my mother saw one, and she had a little house in the jungles, and she got a little garden just in front of her place, and she was having trouble with leaf cutter ants, and she was out there one night with a stick flicking them off her plants or whatever, and she looked up, and there was this huge flying saucer straight out of a sci-fi magazine, it would sound, but they don't have any sci-fi magazines in the jungle. And it was round and flat, and it had around the edge, around the periphery, it had multicoloured lights pulsing on and off, and it just hovered above her house. And she watched it for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then it went in a straight line, and it hovered over a monolith about half a mile away. And I asked the guide if his mother was frightened at all, and she says no. That was the first one she'd ever seen. She said, I felt it was that it was watching me, watching it.
So, when you've got a world view of these things, you're very fortunate, I think. And idea, is there any government, I guess is the best way, that's more open? Seemed like the Cuban government was pretty open.
Well, the way the Cuban people, and I mean,
they're allowed to put it in the papers and talk?
Yeah, why not? Why not? So, and I remember in a few years in Chile, there was a speaker here from Chile, and he said in 1995, the Chilean government and the military officially recognized the existence of OVNIs, and that year they had the largest flap to that day. So that was very interesting. But in Thailand, there's been reports in the hills as well. So it's all over the place. It's all over the place.
Yeah. How about Australia? It seems to me that in your story, when you're talking about going to the military base, their attitude's more or less the same as here in the United States about UFOs.
Right, yes. And I, with all my pictures, I try only to be selective who I show them to. I don't show them to the media, per se, because I know what they'll do. They will lampoon the subject, so I just tend to shy away from it and just hope that I can still get some connection with whatever's out there. And I haven't got any answers, really.
Well, after Laughlin, you're going home.
Yes.
And then where are you going next, you know?
How do you
Tibet.
Decide? We're
Tibet,
going,
huh?
In the first week in April.
And well, you don't stay home long.
No, no. My husband's a chiropractor, and he and a few friends of ours, he goes to seminars all over the world, and we just, if we're in a country, we usually visit the countries next to them, so he goes to...
His chiropractic meetings, and you go to the UFO
people. Yeah, I do my writing and asking questions, so it works out quite well.
Yeah. it works out good.
Yes, indeed.
Well, after, how long have you been doing this?
Well, this is my 10th year here.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've...
Well, and you were obviously interested before you came
here.
Oh,
yes. I've always been, even from a little one, I've been interested in out there, looking at the stars.
And do you think you might have had contact and you just don't know about it yet?
Maybe. I can't answer that.
What's your feeling overall? You've been, you got a world vision of this. All the extraterrestrials, are they friendly? Or have you run across stories that weren't so friendly?
I try only to focus on the positive side of it.
So you don't want to hear about the negative?
Well, I don't know. I try to live in balance with everybody and everything. And if people start talking negative, I sort of tend to shy away from that. So I just try and concentrate
on the
positive.
Might unleash something that you
Yes,
don't
well,
hear.
I don't know. Yes, so I just try and stay on the positive. I'm sure there are plenty of negative stories one could come up with, but I just try and stay with the positive side of it. So.
Okay, folks, you heard it. A worldwide journalist, Kathy Dickman, and she's looking for positive stories. Yeah, I'm just trying to take up for us in the media a little bit.
All right.
Yeah, okay. you never know. Kathy, anything else? Thanks for those pictures, by the way. And anything else you'd like to bring to the attention of the audience?
Yes,
that's not a sophisticated question, but I found out over the years it's probably the best question to ask at the end of an interview, because sometimes we don't give people a chance to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got any closing thoughts?
There's two cases briefly I would like to mention.
Let's talk about them.
One in Thailand.
Okay.
It was 3 years ago. I was up in the mountains in Thailand, Chiang Mai and Chiang Rai up in the mountains. And once again, I asked a guide there, had he heard the word OVNI and UFO? And he says, oh, yes, there's a group of village people that lived on the slope of the hill about a few months before I was visiting there. They saw a light in the sky and they didn't know what it was because they weren't familiar with UFOs. And then they saw other lights visit the primary light. And they, once again, they said that this light seemed to be wanting to attract their attention. and they watch this aerial dance for quite a while, and I asked the guide, and I always ask this question, how did the lights exit? Because they could flash off, they could zip out or speed off or implode or evaporate. Mm-hmm. And they said they just slowly raised up and blended with the star field.
Just faded in the background.
And then I asked them, were they afraid?
Instead of turning on the cloaking machine, they turned on the camouflage machine.
Yes, and I asked them, were they afraid? And they said, well, they weren't sure what they were. They had never seen anything like that before, so they kept it quiet until some other people, the other side of the mountain, came to visit, selling goods or whatever, and they mentioned that they'd seen the same thing. So then they started to talk together, that, you know, like, and swap stories, so to speak. So
yeah.
And another place in Guatemala, I was staying at Lake Tikal, and there was a guide there called Noah. And there's a very large lake, and he said that quite often the fishermen on some nights see lights in the sky, and they're doing their aerial dance. And when these lights appear, they always have a power blackout, always have a blackout. And I asked again, were the fishermen afraid? And they said, they're used to it.
You know, there seems to be a commonality there about power failures and things.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So
I guess maybe these things draw on electrical magical energy of some sort. I don't know how to describe it exactly. Okay, well, it's been interesting. Got anything else?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, well, I've talked you out then. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be looking forward to hearing from you from time to time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Stay in contact, please. Yeah. Kathy Dickman, ace reporter for UFO ideas and stories and folklore. She gets to the bottom of it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing about that report coming up in April. One final thing. I know I've already said that, but you've been to South America at least twice.
Oh, yeah, many times.
Yeah. Seems like there's a lot of action down there. Do you agree?
Yes. Yeah.
Are the ETs, do they like the Latin blood, or what do you think the
reason is? In Mexico, I've been there many times, and they just treat them as their ancient ancestors.
I think it's a
mindset of the people that they're accepting of them.
Yeah.
So they just, you know, they say, oh, here they are again. You know, there's no fear or screaming in the streets.
We got the appropriate music behind us, the Aeon mindset. That's the way we're going to close this. Thanks very much, Kathy Dickman. This
thank
is Jerry
you.
Pippen. We'll be right back. We're at the UFO Congress, of course, and people come here from, well, I've met people from Bulgaria, Italy, Greece, Kathy from Australia, and I've been here about a couple, maybe 3 hours already. So this is definitely an international event. We'll be back in a moment with a man from Ireland. We just did a show with him on the phone. Now we're going to do something in person, Patrick Heron. So don't go away. It happened almost 60 years ago, but the debate still rages. Did an alien spacecraft crash outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947? The most concise and complete series ever broadcast on Roswell, direct from Roswell. New programs added weekly. Check it out on the UFO Files on JerryPippen.com.
It looks like it's about 8 or 10 miles left.